This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm sitting here with Thomas Raquel, pastry chef at La Bernardin, and we are sitting in what could be considered the future lab of food.
Yeah, it's a culinary lab where they do 3D printing. It's a beautiful space.
It's an absolutely beautiful space, and I'm happy we got to do the interview here because I've walked by this place a million times and have never come in and be like, what is this place?
It's pretty cool. Yeah, just the architecture. I'm like, you know.
It's beautiful. So thank you for coming all the way out to LA to do an interview. We appreciate it. So you were born and raised in the Philippines?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in the Philippines. My parents divorced when I was young. So I was raised by my grandparents. And then, you know, we come to the States back and forth. So, but came back here full time when I was like 8.
Okay.
I lived back with my mom and, you know.
And what was it like growing up there? Because, you know, people who grow up outside of the States, and we don't get to interview a lot of people.
Right.
What was the perception of America, American food? Like, what did you think of it? Because you now currently work at, like, one of the best restaurants in the world, fine dining. But I feel like that, or if I'm wrong, doesn't trickle down to, like, what American food is when you're living and growing up outside the States.
I think I'm fortunate enough that when we were, my sister and I, when we were growing up, my parents took us on a lot of trips.
Mm.
So I wouldn't specifically say that it was just more influenced by the Philippines because it's not super, my grandparents were more Spaniards and,
gotcha.
You know, like, and, you know, we come to the States back and forth. So it's more an Americanized version of the Philippines.
Gotcha.
I think, you know, like, you're exposed to different things. I think your palate's more open. And I think specifically, like, the Filipino culture, it's, you know, it's a culmination of so many other countries.
Sure.
You know, like, it's been colonized by the Spaniards and Japanese, Chinese, Malay.
Right.
And, you know, it's almost hard to pinpoint. I mean, I guess that's what the Filipino culture is. It's this mixture of all these.
And so there's, like, an openness,
yeah.
Right?
I mean,
it's not just, like, we, because, you know, you think about, like, Japanese culture. It's, like, we've been doing this for hundreds of thousands of years. Yeah. Like, that is it. You can't do anything else. But with the Filipino food, it's like, let's explore. Let's see. Let's pull from different cultures.
A lot of cultures. I mean, even the cultures that I was, you know, I was exposed with. My grandparents adopted. I have an aunt that's Muslim. I mean, my family's Roman Catholic. You know, like, and I had an aunt that was Muslim. She was, you know, adopted by my grandparents at an older age, I believe. And not everybody can say that. I'm Catholic, but I have a Muslim aunt. You know, like things like that. When we moved back to the States, our neighbor was. They were Jewish and they were Holocaust survivors. And, you know, like my sister and I would wake up in the morning and we would go to their house and have breakfast. So like some of the interviews I've done, they're like, oh, what's your, you know, memory of like for breakfast? Like what? And I think I said blintzes and orange marmalade. And they're like,
I'm
sorry. Were you adopted?
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, my mom worked and, you know, so.
And so how did that influence you early on of just being exposed to all the different cultures, different food and things like that?
I think I always try to insert, you know, like, I think that's why cooking is so visceral, because it's like your memories and your, you know, the flavor memories that you have and all this stuff. I think, like, flavor profiles, I think. Although, you know, like now, I think I always try to tend to just, you know, either stick to simpler flavors, more approachable flavors, and represent it in a different way, you know, with the way we present the dessert, or try to use techniques that enhances the flavor, or, you know, whatever ingredient it is.
I mean, I think it's amazing to see those early days of, like, getting to know food and love food and things like that, and how it can just follow you through your entire life, and you, like, somehow you're in the kitchen now, looking back at me, like, oh yeah, this is when it started to shape at a young age. When did food start becoming more than just something that you ate or it was part of your life? And when did you start thinking about it as something that's more of like you could get into?
I think I've always loved cooking.
Yeah.
And baking, and my sister, my grandmother loved to cook.
Yeah, what did she make?
I mean, she would make like flan. She would make cakes. My sister loved making brownies. So like we've always been surrounded by food, and we're always like cooking, like most chefs growing up. But you know, I've never really thought of it as like I'm gonna have a, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna be a chef. I never really was like, oh my god, I'm gonna be a chef. And, you know, but yeah, I think I've always loved cooking. I've always had this thing. Always enjoyed cooking.
And you wound up going to culinary school at a really young age, though, right?
Yep. Went to culinary school, and it felt natural. You know, it didn't feel work. It doesn't feel like it's work. It doesn't feel so like, I mean, you know, like when you work in a restaurant, it's like minimum of 12 hours a day.
Minimum. Yeah.
You know.
And repetitive in some, like, you know, especially there's the creative part about it, but there's something about working in a restaurant where you're just like, I've been here.
Like, you know, you've been there for 12 hours. I mean, there's days where, like, you know, if I go on vacation or whatever, if I stay in New York for, you know, I just take a week off or whatever, if I stay in New York, and it's like, I can't wait to go back.
Yeah.
You know, but there's also days where, like, oh my God, I've been here for, like, this long, and but it never feels, I always feel at home when I go back to the kitchen.
And was that from the beginning, from like the second you got into culinary school? Just, like, you just felt like, this is where I'm supposed to be?
I think the first time I walked into the kitchen, I think, and the smell of the cleaning products, and, you know, like how the kitchen is, it's like that. I can still, there's still certain kitchens that I walk in today that I would always remember that, like, that moment of, like, you know, it brings you back to to culinary school, like the stocks are, like, boiling, and, you know, like, there's random things that reminds me of, like, that first day in culinary school. I just felt excited. You know, because I was practically a child.
Yeah, because you were, like, you know, 16,
I was 16, so, like, I didn't, you know, like, you were obviously exposed to this, like, oh, my God, I'm pretending to be an adult.
Yeah.
You know,
because they don't care how old, if you're going to sign up and you're going to go there, I mean, you still got to do your work.
I was just having a real responsibility and, like, my schoolmates were much older than I was, and you know, like I didn't tell them that I was 16 because it's like, oh, I want to go drink.
Wait,
and
did you lie about your age?
I didn't say anything until I think you know, I just didn't say anything, and I would pretend to smoke.
Oh my god!
But yeah, that was not really.
And so, I mean, you pretty quickly moved from culinary school. You had some incredible like externships. I mean, the places you were still name check day, like Luke's, AOC. Yeah. Working over at Wolfgang's catering stuff. How did
that was the first job, actually. Like the
Wolfgang?
The Wolfgang Puck.
How did that happen?
Well, because they used to get culinary students at the, you know, like for their
right. Right, when they do the big catering.
The big catering things, and they would get.
We need someone just to shell peas for
right, that's
a thousand
what it is.
People.
Yeah. So, like, that was one of the things. And I remember, like, I think we were making mini burger patties, and it was like.
All day.
You know, like
all day
it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was remember just being so excited because it's like, I mean, obviously it's like monotonous, and it's just mini burger patties, and it's nothing groundbreaking. But I remember being excited, like, oh my god, I'm getting paid for this,
yeah,
or like this is a job.
I
like
mean,
I'm
a,
you know what I mean? Like, oh my god, I'm like, I was just excited doing some making something that will actually be eaten by people.
Well, you know, it's a big thing because being that young of the age. And what year is this? When were you doing all this?
God, I think this was like 2003.
So, you know, and also
2004, yeah.
Food for those back then who may not remember. Like, it wasn't the cool pop culture thing it was
or
now.
It's
like,
exciting,
you were just like, I'm here, I'm doing my work because I'm going to put in the time to do that work.
Yeah.
When did you start
taking it seriously?
I guess
well, because even at that time, I mean, now you just brought me back, and I don't remember being that serious about it at the time, because it's like, you know, like it wasn't as glamorous cooking that time. It's not as glamorous as it is today, only for the higher echelon of chefs, yes, but I mean it's not as like commonly
unanimous. There was no, you weren't there back there like taking photos and posting to Instagram of all the patties. It was just like, it was like, yeah, I'm doing my work, you know, and then I'm gonna go home or maybe have a beer with the team.
You know, like I just remember being there and just being sort of excited, just being a part of like, wow, like, you know, like working there and just working for like Wolfgang Puck. It's like, oh my God, it's my first job. And I didn't really, I mean, even after externship and doing all these things, being like stashing up places, even then I didn't really, you know, like, there's always still kind of a doubt.
That you were gonna stick
that
in
I'm
it?
Gonna, I'm not, you know, like I've always, it always felt good. But, you know, there's a lot of hardships when you're starting out cooking. So, you know, like it's long hours and there's a lot of like tenacity that's involved.
Sure.
So like at the time I wasn't really 100% sure that, oh my God, will I actually really have a career out of this? Will I actually become a chef one day or, you know, and, but I just really nothing, there was nothing else that I felt passionate about or like, was excited about. And you know, flipping through cookbooks and like, you know, like, oh my God, I want to do there, I want to be there, I want to try this, you know, I want to do that. And up until I think when I moved back from Paris and like putzing around LA.
Hold on, you can't just skip over Paris, because being a pastry chef and going like, now that you aren't going to Paris, it feels like this big, like that is a part of the journey, right? What brought you to Paris?
It was an internship.
Just an internship?
Internship.
How did that happen?
It was arranged through the school. I mean, it was not really, to be honest, it was a hotel. It was more like living there. It was a hotel.
Comparative
to what it is today, you know, I mean, I'm obviously grateful that I got to spend time there. The chef was American, so I got away being the stupid American that did not speak, you know.
Any plates thrown?
No, it was not as, that's the thing,
it was not the Paris experience where you go, where like, I went there and I got yelled at until I went home crying.
No, it wasn't that. I mean, Pierre Hermé was, you know, first day was like scraping vanilla beans, peeling lychees, stuff like that. And, you know, like after the internship, you get to sit down with Pierre Hermé and he signs a book and he gives it to you. There was no like, you know, it was almost as sterile as it gets.
When you come back, and you don't go back, you go to Chicago, right?
I came back to LA and just sort of like, putz around for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then And I went to Chicago.
Now, what I've always loved about Chicago is that I felt that it is one of the most modern, forward-thinking cities when it comes to food, as far as like technology, right, forward-thinking, like that. But coupled with this amazing like Midwest
thing,
and it creates this incredible type of food that wouldn't exist anywhere else.
Right. I think that that's the thing about the Midwest, and that's one of the things that I love. Is that, you know, Chicago, you know, it's a second, you know, people say it's a second city, if, you know, because it's like people there actually have to try and prove themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful that I got my start in Chicago, and it's still, you know, like, I'm from LA, but I, whenever somebody asks me, it always say, I always kind of say that, like, oh, Chicago's home. It feels like home to me,
yeah,
you know, and, but yeah, I mean, I think, it's not, you know, like, it's not New York. I feel like New York has so much resources. Everybody's, yeah, refers to New York for everything. And I mean, today Chicago's popping. I mean, it's
Chicago
great.
Chicago is on fire.
On fire. And I mean, it has been for a while, but yet, I think in Chicago, restaurants still needs to, in the end of the day, it's still a business.
Yeah.
You still need to, you know, like, fine dining doesn't thrive in Chicago as much as it does in New York. You know, it's not, you know, like, money's just not...
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about those early days in Chicago, and then we're going to talk about how you made your way to New York and La Bernardin. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Regular guy, regular size, regular drink, regular fries, regular pesticide, regular car, regular house, regular dads, regular Channel 5. That's just a regular life. Hey, hey, it isn't so bad. We all want to be someone. Someone. A regular girl, regular curl, regular video games and squirrels, regular cinnamon swirl, regular job, a regular tan, a regular man, a regular diamonds and pearls. That's just a regular world. Hey, hey, it isn't so bad. We all want to be someone. Oh, 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 on top, number one. Oh, 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 but I'll take what I get, and I'll make the most of it. Cause I know, I'm not just someone. Someone on top, number one. But I'll take what I get, and I'll make the most of it. Cause I know, oh yeah, we all want just
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Thomas Raquel, La Bernardin's pastry chef. So you've come back from Paris, you've putzed around in LA, and what brought you to Chicago?
I wanted to work at this restaurant called L2O. I was following the chef, Laurent Gras, and I went and staged and, you know, got the job and worked there.
So let me ask you about that mindset. So when you're going to stage, right, you have a couple of nights to prove yourself.
Yeah.
How do you approach that? Like, how do you go in and say, because not every place you stage is where you want a job, right?
Yes.
And that's probably a different approach. But when you're going in...
Well, you realize that's not a place for you.
Right. But, like, how do you go in and be respectful to the restaurant, but then show them that they need you? Because that's what you're trying to do, right? That you're going to help elevate their game.
Yes, and also, like, you know, if you will be a good fit for the team. And
sure.
You'll be, you know, yeah. I mean, that you will, you know, I think that restaurant, you just need somebody that, you know, would put in the work. It's not, you know, that restaurant wasn't for the faint of heart. You know,
no.
Like, it was a tough kitchen, quiet, clean. We deep clean twice a night.
Twice a day. Oh, twice
like
a day.
Like a day, you know, like you prep and then you break down, you know, like you sweep, you sweep, you pour soap and you deck scrub it and you squeegee it and then you mop. And then you do that again. And once a week we polish all the hoods, you know, like on top of your regular mise en place. And,
right.
You know, like it's a grind and, you know, like.
But how did it help shape you?
I mean, because it was a tough job mentally and like physically. And, you know, to always having to be, and also the chef. I mean, the chef was, you know, he comes from a place where you think you're doing a good job, do better. You know, like, and, you know, he has this thing. And, you know, like for me, I think he was one of the first chefs that I've ever seen that, like, the way he worked, the way he moved. Like, just was like, he was kind of like a Jedi. Like, oh my God, like, I want to be like him, you know, like one day. Or like, just the way, you know, like, there was no question how talented he was. Like, you know, like, there was just, you know, like.
You just,
know,
there was no.
There was, you know, like, it was more of a unanimous thing with the staff that we were there, or like, I was there, you know, being a part of something bigger than myself.
I mean, that's amazing.
That makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. You know, it's a rarity. I feel today, or it's becoming more a rarity for people to look at a chef like that,
yeah,
and say, I want to stay, because you stayed there for years.
Yeah, I stayed for, I think it, yeah, a little over 2 years, I think, if I'm not mistaken, yeah.
You know, and sometimes people jump ship after 6 months these days.
I mean, honestly, that job was tough.
Yeah.
And I had patches of white hair on my head, and I had patches of bald spots because my hair was falling off because I was so stressed with it. The job was stressful, you know, but it was great. It was a great experience. I learned a lot about, you know, I learned a lot about myself and how, you know, in the end of the day, you have to wake up. Talent needs to be there, but you also need to have the tenacity to get up every day and do the job.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, to push yourself to just keep going. Because, you know, yeah, to always wake up and do it. You know, like, you have to every day and just do it. And having that, like, the passion to come in. And, you know, like, we worked, God.
Did you miss those 12-hour days because you were doing, 16-hour days?
No, it was not even, yeah, it was not even, I mean, now my average day is 12 hours, but at the time, I think it was more like 14, 16 at the time.
And so where'd you go after there? Were you ready to, did you start feeling that you're like, you've put in the time, you've done the staging, like, did you feel that you were like getting ready to do something on your
own? When I left.
On your own?
When I left, I actually was going to work at Trotter's.
Oh, wow.
I had an interview with Charlie Trotter's, and then the chef de cuisine offered me the job, but I went in a different direction. Just traveled around. I think I took 3 months.
You're like, I need a little bit of time for myself,
like to get rid of my PTSD
and de-white the hair.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think I consulted for a chocolate shop in Chicago, and then what else did I do? I went to work at that restaurant Acadia in the South Side.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And you were there as a
pastry chef.
As the pastry chef, but yeah. You were actually sort of able to like create the menu, right?
Yeah.
What was it like to finally be in charge, or the most charge, you know, right. being able to like really take, so you have the modernist stuff from Chicago that right. you'd have, but you were in Paris, the yeah. LA stuff. Like, how did it feel to finally create that first menu?
I think it was more of like, I was ready to like, I was itching to.
And what year is this?
Oh my God. I can look it up. I don't, to be honest, I don't even remember. I'm lack of sleep right now.
Yeah.
But, I just remember feeling itchy and feeling like
I'm ready
and like there was you go into restaurants or you know like you have that feeling, that burning feeling inside you, like I can't wait until it's my turn to do this, you know, like
but you put in the time, because I feel like sometimes people have that feeling yeah. now after being somewhere for 2 weeks
yeah
but it yeah I know.
You know, it's like you woke up and, you know, and you think that you could do this. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, that's why I think there's a lot of...
Bad restaurants?
Bad, or, you know...
Bad
or,
menus?
Yeah. I think you need to be ballsy and go for that, but you need to know that you stand on solid grounds. I mean, yeah. Besides working in those restaurants, I've helped open a lot of things in between,
sure.
you know, those things. And, you know, you pick up little things here and there and you read, you absorb things by traveling and seeing different things. And you remember this. But, you know, like there's so many ideas and there's so many things that I wanted to do. And, you know, Acadia was a new restaurant and I was looking for a job and I wanted a place where I could just make desserts that, like, I believed in. And... You know, and I think I was looking for a venue. I mean, it doesn't matter how talented or what you can do. If no one sees it, it's not valid.
Mm.
And I just wanted to work at a place where I could make desserts and, you know, make my own calls. And I was lucky enough in that that's the job that it was. And, you know, I remember, you know, not only desserts, we would run. I used to run foie specials on the menu, and I would sear foie on the flat top in pastry.
Amazing.
I would always like, I'm so just ADD, I'm always trying to like do something different, and I'm very grateful for what I've accomplished in that restaurant. I offered dessert tasting at the bar.
It was great. And then when did
the La Bernardin?
The siren call of New York. Because look, you did LA, you did yep. Chicago, you did Paris, you know, you traveled around. But there is, I feel, this thing about cooking in New York.
Yes. I mean, to be honest, La Bernardin has always been a dream.
And really?
When did
La Bernardin come on your radar? Or had it just always
La Bernardin's in everybody's radar. I mean, anywhere yeah. in the, you know, it's like that beacon. L2O was an answer to La Bernardin.
Mm.
It's the L2O was supposed to be the La Bernardin of Chicago.
Right.
You know, obviously Dan. And then, you know, Michael Osconis was the pastry chef at La Bernardin. And, you know, he put the pastries and it was... I've always wanted to work there. It was always a dream. But, you know, like, you work hard, you put your head down, you never really think that hard work pays off.
But it does. But that's the thing. It does.
You know, like the thing is you have to wait until it happens, until, you know, you can't be like, oh, you know, I did this and I deserve this. You know, like I think that that's the mentality of most people now. You know, they stand on nothing and they're entitled and they expect that, like.
You got to earn it. It's not deserving, it's earning it.
You have to earn it. And you have to, you know, like respect is earned, not given. You know?
And so how did it happen? Did they call you? You call them?
They called me. They were.
Ooh, that's a nice call. A nice call, right?
Remember,
it's not every day that La Bernardin is calling to say, hey, we know about you.
You know, it was it was just like, come and, you know, can you come in to meet with Chef? And I did. And
how was that? What's he like?
Honestly, everybody, not because I work for him, but like he really is the nicest French guy. I mean, I'm intimidated, you know, like obviously, I mean, even now, like when I do tasting with them in the present day, I'm still like, oh my God, you're Eric Perrin, I'm cooking for you. And of course he's desensitized with that, but like for me, every single time I'm still like chef, like, you know.
Chef, capital C chef.
You know
chef.
What I mean? But he's like, Tomas, relax, you know, stop shaking. He's like, you know, like, you've been here for how long and you're still, I'm like, well, you're Eric Repair, you know?
You're Eric Repair. So what was it like? So you get the call, you get the job.
I came and met up with them and just, we chatted in this office literally for not longer than 15 minutes. And I left the office and I was like, yeah.
Blew that one.
You know, because you're like,
we're calling Delta. You're like, okay, I need a one-way ticket back to Chicago.
Yeah. And I met up with him, and I didn't think that, you know, because we just chatted, and then they brought me back again for I think another interview, and then we did a tasting. And
what did you put up when you served him? And what was that like in that first one?
To be honest, it was nerve-wracking. The freezer broke. And I remember, like, I remember walking down the streets of New York and I remember seeing a nitrogen tank and thought about pulling the hose and try to steal some of the nitrogen that's cooling the...
Yeah.
It's a true story. If you are on 52nd and 8th, there's a nitrogen tank on the corner that's cooling the thing. And I remember trying to pull it, but it's locked. It's actually padlocked under the bottom. I know because I tried to pull that hose.
I
bought this thing.
Totally sterilized. And so you get the job. And what was it like? Because you mentioned before about you still remember walking into a kitchen for the first time. What was it like walking in on that first day?
Everybody looked at me like I was an intern. Actually, I remember one of the sommeliers was like, oh, are you here for your internship? I'm like, no.
Actually. No, I'm the pastry chef.
I look like I'm 12 and, you know, intimidating, you know?
Yeah.
To be honest.
But you have the stuff to back it up, though.
All of the upper management at La Bernardin is, you know, they've been there for, you know, some time. And, you know, I'm this little boy, like this stupid boy from Chicago coming in here being the, you know, like, it, you do, it's still, it's a big restaurant.
It's big and more,
you know?
Yeah, it's big. It's more one than of the biggest in the world.
You know, I've never would have worked at a place like that. And yeah, obviously it was intimidating, you know, like meeting the staff, and having to, you know, like start doing desserts and, you know, but I think what propelled me and what really helped me is that knowing that, you know, Chef Repair believed in me. And I mean, now I can say that, like, at the time, obviously, you know, there's like, we need to get to know each other and we need, you know, you get used to your boss. But I mean, now in retrospect, and I really do like credit him with this, you know, I tell him all the time that, Chef, you know, whatever I accomplish in my career from here on out, it's, you know, like, it will fall back on you. You know, it's because, like, you believed in me before I even believed in myself. Because it's like, at the time, it's like, oh, shit. Like, what the fuck did I get myself into? Like, I, you know, like...
It's like you get so focused on, like, wanting to step in the kitchen, wanting to get there. And
you
then
you get there,
there.
And you get there and you're like, oh, fuck. I'm like, not, oh. You know what I mean? I was 26 years old.
That's crazy. So how do you two work together? Like, how do you guys develop a menu?
Well, I come up with the desserts and, you know, I do a tasting with Chef and he gives me like, oh, let's add more this or that. He just gives like a feedback, but he doesn't necessarily like dictate, like, make this. You know, he's like, you're the pastry chef, you make it. I'm not the pastry chef. You know,
which is amazing.
Yeah. And he loves desserts and he's an advocate for desserts. So it's good.
I mean, that's great to have. And this is not to diminish the restaurants you worked in before, but being at a restaurant like La Bernardin with Repair, you have certain resources, right?
Right.
That are not available to you before. How does that inspire you? How do you work with those?
I mean, for us, we try to source the best product possible. I mean, I always just let the season sort of just dictates on what we do, and like as far as product goes, and it goes with that, and just like apply the best technique to enhance the product. I mean, resources. I mean,
it's amazing. You know, I mean, part of your resources are not just the ingredients, because, you know, right. I think I'd be remiss not to mention that we're sitting in this culinary lab with 3D printing and different molds, and you use that type of technology.
We are not using the 3D printing yet, but...
But you're dabbling.
No, I mean, but we're, yeah.
You're
we're,
dabbling.
Yeah.
But you use some of the molds, right?
I make... actually, we have a peach dessert that we're putting on the menu that I made the molds out of, like, peach pits.
Yeah.
So just to make it so when you crack into the actual dessert, I mean, it's not a real peach, but you, when you cut into it, there'll be a peach pit that you can eat.
That's amazing.
So, you know, like, things like that. Yeah, I mean, having, you know, being able to have a team to support your vision, I think it's the greatest blessing. To have a strong team to execute, and you know, we're a busy restaurant, so
that's underselling it.
You know what I mean? It's a busy restaurant. It's a pop, you know, and we sell a lot of dessert. So when it comes to that, it's, you know, I'm definitely grateful to have the support of the team. Mm-hmm. The support of my boss is the greatest thing. It's not even boss is almost disrespectful to call him, but
chef.
You know, he's my chef.
He's your chef,
and he supports me. It's like, no, you know, there's a vanilla crisis right now. but you know, chef's like, you don't worry about the cost. You worry about making it perfect.
Amazing.
You know, and that's, you know,
that's all you can ask for.
You know, what more could I want? You know, yeah. Like, I feel like I did something in my past to deserve this, you know, good karma. But,
awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with
you.
Us. Yeah. We really appreciate it. Congratulations. It's very rare to meet such a talented chef who had a dream,
yeah,
got to where he wanted to be, and is now just crushing it at the highest
you
level.
You know, I just say that, like, you know, like, I'm just another guy just trying to make it and just trying to do, like, you know, like, I had a conversation with a cook at the restaurant we did the James Beard dinner at, and I said, you know, like, you need to just keep going, and you got to keep doing it, and you just have to believe in yourself that you can, you know. And I am not anything special. I'm just another guy just trying to make it. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to be modest, but like,
I know what you're saying.
But like, we are all just trying to, you know, share your knowledge or like do the best you can. You know, like, nobody wakes up in the morning like, I want to do a bad job.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way you go about it, I think.
Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I'll say congratulations. Yeah. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snackin' Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Shocking. Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Welcome, Radical Dads, to the show.
Thanks.
Our last band of 2013. I'm very excited. It's you guys.
Thank you.
We heard about you because one of your bands on your label said, oh, you should get these guys on.
Nice.
So, yeah, so welcome.
Thanks.
Why don't we give people a brief history of how you guys came together?
Well, long ago, we went to college.
First, there was nothing.
Yeah, let's go way back.
But yeah, we all met in college and then started playing music together.
What college?
Well, we actually technically didn't go to the same college.
Oh, okay.
Technically, we didn't actually go to college.
We weren't really enrolled. No, we...
Chris and I went to Connecticut College.
And I went to Brown. Close enough.
University. Close
enough. But how'd you meet then?
Friends of friends of friends.
Was it like friends of friends, like, hey, these people play music? Or just like you guys, like, hey, come to a party?
We're just like friends first.
Okay.
And then we became music friends.
We're just getting very granular here.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing that makes you friends.
Who made the first phone call? Or was it a text message? No.
Okay. No, there were no cell phones at the time.
Oh, okay.
It was a long time ago.
Chris had a Man or Astro Man poster on his dorm room door. So like, got to talk to that guy.
Okay, perfect. Oh, when it was that type of, was still a signifier.
Yeah, it was still very
underground and like not, okay, good times. I remember the first time that I realized that it was done when this girl when I was in college I had a crush on for a long time because she dressed so cool and everything. And then I like finally got the courage to walk through because I was like, we're going to have a great conversation about music. I'm into music. She's the way she dressed, she's always into music. And I was like, so what do you listen to? She's like, well, I'm really, really big into Limp Bizkit and Dave Matthews. And I went, shit. And then I went, shit, it's over. And then I never asked someone based on how they were dressed what they listened to. I waited first. But yeah. So, okay. So, of a time when it still meant something.
It meant something.
Okay.
Yeah, Modest Mouse used to be my signifier. Like, if someone knew who that was, and then all of a sudden everyone knew who that
right.
was.
Right. Yeah, and then they switched over to the mainstream. Then you went, I need a new
signifier.
Yeah, new signifier. I was at college radio.
Well, everyone loves pizza.
That's over, too.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
I don't know what's underground.
Yeah. Anyway.
Soda.
Yeah, you guys made a soda magazine, right?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I love soda.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm 34 years old, and I had never written a zine, and I was like, it's about time. If I'm going to do this before I die... I need to get on it now. And I love soda, so I figured you write zines about what you love.
Do you have a preference? Is it like Coke or Pepsi, or does it go like way deeper? What's your favorite?
Right now I would have to say it's Fentimans Rose Lemonade.
Not to be specific.
Yeah.
where do you even get that?
Actually, it's widely available.
Yeah.
You would be surprised.
Define widely.
Fifth Avenue. Tiffany.
All over Bushwick.
Yeah. All over Bushwick.
Nordstrom.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of good soda in this town.
But what is it specifically about soda?
I think it's a really good conduit of flavor. Because you're not really worried about having a meal or getting nutrients. Like, you know you're just in it for the flavor and for the bubbles. And I think the bubbles help deliver the flavor not only in your mouth, but also up your nose.
Yeah, I mean, the effervescence. No, this is very serious. I don't even understand why you're laughing. I don't. We have a Pizza
See,
Underground here. Very serious show.
Taking it to the next level
now. I would agree with you. How big is the zine?
It's soda-sized.
It's in a soda 4-pack.
That is, did you photocopy it? How did you make, since you're a 34-year-old, make your first scene?
We sent it out, but it was a fancy photocopy place, basically. It wasn't really.
Yeah. It's getting closer to a magazine than a zine, but, you know, we did what we could.
Was there a depth of topic? Like, did you feel like you covered everything? Or, like, there's some stuff that was left on the table? You could do a couple more issues.
Oh, my God.
There's always more.
There's, like, it just opened the Pandora's box
Pandora's can.
Pandora's bottle. Yeah. It popped the top. Yeah. The bubbles are flying everywhere. And yeah, so we're in for issue two.
And what's it called?
Fizz Navigator.
Oh, that's a good name.
Took a while to think of it.
Helter Seltzer was in the top running.
Oh, yeah. That's also quite controversial.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't want to cause any problems.
Yeah, especially for soda. All right, well, why don't we get into a song? Like, contemplate. Yeah. Let's get back to why we're here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Modest Mouse covers?
Modest Mouse cover.
Across the board.
It's called Float On.
I mean, if you played Modest Mouse cover.
Float On.
Not saying that I don't want to hear you guys. I'm saying.
So what's the name of the first song?
The song is called Slammer.
Okay. Live on Snacky Tooth.
Sidewalk all over my block. I won't go outside anymore. Good for they're up to my front door. My friend said it's no use anymore. And the vibes you give are the ones you'll end up living with. I find alright, narrowly crystallized.
Great.
Thanks.
That was really nice.
Thanks.
Maybe we'll use you guys as our litmus test for girls.
We're the new.
Oh yeah.
Oh hey.
Well, no, actually, the only guy that wasn't in Pizza Underground, the self-described boyfriend of the band, while we were playing your song in the opening, was like, "Who's this Radical Dads?" And I was like, "Oh, do you know them?" He's like, "No, I don't know them, but I've heard them." And I was like, "Oh,
nice.
Points up, my friend.
Ah.
Points up, yeah." So, you know, keeping with all things pizza, Chris, you have a pizza slice blog? Like,
did you see Chris's socks?
Oh, no, I didn't see his socks.
I have pizza socks on.
Oh, man.
Today.
Wait, did they get any pizza today?
Oh, yeah, they stole a pie off the Pizza Underground.
Yeah, we got one of their slices.
Yeah, they got one of their slices. Yeah. They might literally cut you for that.
What, slice you?
Yeah.
Mm.
They might.
So, I mean, pizza slice Bam. Blog is, like, very specific and very different than, like, a pizza blog.
Yeah. It's called Slice Guys.
Slice Guys finish last?
In this case, they finish top of the heap.
Yeah. Tell us about the blog. I mean, when did it start?
It's an image-based online periodical. It started about a year ago. It uses a blogging platform called Tumblr.
Yeah, they're new. I like them.
It's new. It's keep brand
an eye,
new.
Hey, keep an eye on them. And Face.
Yeah.
Facegram.
It's a new platform. It allows you to express yourself and tap into your passions. So my friend and I at work, we're like co-founders.
The two Slice Guys.
We're both Slice Guys.
Obviously, it's a plural.
Right.
With a Z.
Right. It does have a Z.
And it's such a huge undertaking for a blog. You can't just do it by yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
None of your series.
It's like trying to.
Right.
Yeah.
Well said.
So it basically initially it tried to portray people we thought were Slice Guys, regardless of their gender. So for instance, Mitt Romney made an appearance because he was eating a slice of pizza, and he just had this look on his face that suggested that he was a slice guy. But it's kind of all encompassing of pizza culture.
I think Jon Stewart's a slice guy.
I believe he is.
Oh,
you ever see that the most amazing skit of all time when he? I think it is Romney or maybe Donald Trump when he goes to like Familia's famous pizza.
Yeah,
it's the best. And what his pizza takedown bits are?
What makes a slice guy, or gal, or whoever?
I think.
Can you answer that?
I mean, it's like
slice sign.
Slice.
It's a certain like vibe. It's just the vibe of the thing.
Is there a slice science to it?
It's like remember a few years ago, I guess it was more than a few years ago, when the Supreme Court was trying to define pornography and somebody was like, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. I think it's kind of like that.
But don't you know when you see a slice?
Well, it's not slices necessarily. It's kind of just like pizza. Could be pizza themed imagery, or it could be slices, could be pies, could be toppings.
Have you been to the Pizza Museum down in Philadelphia?
Yeah, yes. Dude, like a month ago. Second
Did you
trip.
Try the ice cream pizza?
No.
They have a Radical Dad sticker on their megaphone.
Ooh. That's really good. They know who you guys are. Now it's maybe too popular. Well,
No.
We're not on the wall. We're not on the wall.
Don't worry.
Okay. If you had to create the Radical Dad's pizza, what would the toppings be? And what type of pizza would it be?
Skateboard grip tape.
I think there would be some
prehistoric topping choices.
Yeah, like tar from the Liberia tar pits.
Gummy snacks.
Yeah.
And then lots of gummy snacks.
We eat a lot of gummy snacks as a band.
Do you have a favorite?
Whew. Favorite.
I like the little bottles of cola that also taste like cola.
Yeah.
Like soda and gummy snacks. Yeah, all in one.
The gummy frogs that taste like frogs.
Yeah, escargot, so good.
So good. All right, let's hear another. Let's shred another tune. Oh. I don't know if I call this shredding. Let's like.
We
let's
can
work
shred
it out.
This one.
Oh yeah, you want to shred
What's
a tune?
The most shreddish.
We're gonna stroke this one.
Okay. Oh, God. Live on Snack. Like, you'll know it when you see it.
Yeah.
What are we
called,
doing? Recklessness?
It's called recklessness.
Yeah. You just have to remember how to play it. We'll be right back.
There it is.
Drop it.
One question.
Tambourine drop. That's a new one.
That's yeah. how we do it.
There's a photo of like a Lego pizza slice on the blog.
Did you build that?
No, it's like Lego made a pizza. I don't know. Do you have more information on this?
No. Okay. So
it's off the rails.
I think one of the good things about the blog is that you can look at a picture that's posted on it, and then you can go inside my mind and be like, "What did Chris Google to find this image?"
I mean,
I would have called it blog with no. Not the blog or my blog, but the one good thing about blog is...
yeah.
I mean, to me, it's like the only one, so it's like yeah. it's the entire concept.
Yeah, it's the only one worth reading.
Huffington
yeah.
what? No.
Yeah. So you guys are recording a new record, right?
Oh, yeah. I think we finished it, right?
We're getting it mastered next week, so...
Congratulations.
Oh, wait a second. I thought you were going to drop it secretly. Oh, like Beyonce.
Yeah.
Can we scrub this segment from...
Yeah, we were going to do that, but then Beyonce did it. So.
Yeah. How did she keep that fucking secret? I'm sorry.
She's a genius.
Are you about to say it wasn't a secret, like you knew?
No, I'm not saying that I didn't know, but like it was like a secret just from the media. That's it. They just didn't tell people... I'm sure a lot of people knew they just didn't tell people about it. It's really easy.
None of us were prepared for it.
Yeah. Really easy... We'll talk after. I think it's easier. So it's getting mastered. Are you excited about it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Can you share the name?
Can we share the name?
Yeah. We can give you the exclusive name.
It's called Universal Coolers.
Ooh. Oh. I like it. Are you the Universal Coolers? Is that self-referential?
No.
No. But we want to be a part of the team.
Okay. Is this like a anti-global warming record? Did this show just get very political very fast? Soda, pizza, and politics. We don't do political shows, politics. Not since episode 2, Greg. we got rid of that. Where did you guys record it?
I'm at Gravesend Recordings with Julian and Carlos over there.
The Silent Barn.
Oh, nice.
The Silent Barn.
Yeah.
What's the snack situation like when you guys were recording?
Dismal.
What?
Oh.
It's not so bad.
We supplied.
Yeah, we supply. I mean, we bring our own snacks BYOS. Wherever we go.
Yeah.
We got Annie Bunny Gummies. When those are good.
Yeah, a very good snack bag.
There's a good, not to change the topic, but there's a good pizza restaurant over there.
It's true.
Which over there?
Norbert's.
Is it like a pizza like Roberta's or like a slice joint?
Slice joint.
Greg, obviously it's a slice joint. It wouldn't be good if it was not a slice joint. They don't have to be mutually exclusive. Do you know any place that's not a slice point that you consider good? Got it.
It's hard.
What about Motorino?
Pizza Hut? Yeah, Motorino's pretty good.
Like yeah, that. That's not a slice joint. Pizza Hut, you can do it turns into a slice joint if you get the buffet.
Did you say slice jaw?
Joint.
Because I think, okay.
Slice jaw.
Joint.
Slice
jaw.
Jaw.
And
what's the plan for the record? Are you guys going to self-release on your label or?
We're not sure.
We don't know.
We might.
Do you guys want to put it out?
Do you guys know anybody in Matador Records?
Yes.
Do you guys have like some solid listeners from...
We have good. We got people. All seven of you. If you guys want to release,
do a call out now.
Yeah.
Call and show.
Do you like what you're hearing? Do you want to release a record? Get in touch with us.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how like they portray that in a lot of like movies with bands and like 80s and like early 90s. Like Airheads.
It just happens. Like
that's what happened to Airheads. Yeah. We heard you on the radio. Now you're millionaires.
Is that Tom Petty had the best one? I thought.
What was Tom?
He just went to like. He just went to LA and then he found a. List of numbers of record companies and just called them, and then someone offered him a deal and he was just like, oh, this is pretty easy.
He went to California. He's like, I'm gonna go to California and get a record deal.
Where did he find that list?
And everyone...
he went into a phone booth to call, and he found the list in the phone booth, and he's like, oh, this is gonna be easy.
Wait a second, like in a phone booth?
Someone... this is according to his
and someone or someone had left, or someone had left a list.
Someone had left a list.
Oh. He didn't just open up to R for record company. By the way, that story sounds so thin.
I know.
Like, I had my laptop stolen once and got returned, and, like, the person who returned it stole it, but they made up some story. And, like, the first two times, I was like, oh, my God. And third time, someone's like, sounds like they're the ones that stole it. And I was like, shh, you're right. You're absolutely right. That story sounds like Tom Petty's like, I need something better than just, like, yeah. But it's a good one.
But it fits with the movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That magical list.
Yeah. Oh, he also went into one record company, and they're like, it was like a major label, like Warner Brothers or something huge, and they're like, okay, we're really psyched about you, Tom. We'll put out your like first single. And he was like, no, I want a whole record deal. And so he left and went to another record company and got another record deal, like at the next place.
That's how easy it is.
Tom Petty's the man.
Exactly.
Also, it's like totally of a different time. Yeah. It's like it's just
no way.
If you show up, you're in.
Yeah. I mean that's also how they portrayed it on movies. Like it was a time where if you just showed up, you know, yeah, we'll give you so much money to be made. He won because he's Tom Petty.
He's Tom Petty. Right. Yeah.
I saw him this summer. First story is true, where the guy's like, you know, I was the guy who left the record list, or the second story where it's like, I turned down the idea of a Tom Petty album. I just wanted to do a single.
Right.
Let's find those guys.
They lost.
They open up full pizza pie places.
Who's making those guys are not Slice guys.
No.
Those guys didn't know it when they saw it.
Yeah. All right. Well, where can people find your music? Follow you guys.
When's the new album coming out?
Who knows?
Mm.
In the spring?
Springtime.
Probably spring. 2014?
2014.
2018.
Well,
yeah, it's like...
We're planning on making this the Lost album. We're back in the studio.
Yeah.
We're going to wait till the reunion offers.
Yeah. We're going to break up right now. Yeah.
Were you guys bowling today?
We were at Brooklyn. Yeah.
We did a kids show. We did a Kid Rocker
show.
Oh,
you did the Kid Rocker show. Yeah. How was it?
It was awesome.
Amazing.
Did those kids bug out?
A little bit
in their own way.
What are the parents like? Do they just have like drunk?
Parents drunk. Are the best.
They're like pictures of margaritas.
They're all kind
of
like hunched over with their like smartphones out, like following the kids around,
documenting the cuteness.
Did you get any wings?
We got fried chicken.
Oh, it's so good.
It's delicious.
We've said it before. Say it again. Brooklyn Bowl, best hospitality. If you ever play there,
they were very nice.
They showing that one scene of a shark eating a dolphin from the planet Earth?
They just loop
planet Earth, and I think they only have one of the discs, and it's always, I feel like it's always the shark eating the seal.
I've seen that in the past.
You know, they slow down, like super slow down. It's the most, I mean, that's all you really need to see.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Maybe not for the kids.
Yeah, the kids.
For
the kids.
They gotta learn something.
Hey, you get out of line? Look at that. Yeah. You get out of line? You're the seal.
We had stickers, and one of the kids was scared of our sticker.
Started crying.
Is it the same type of sticker that's on the megaphone at the pizza?
Yeah, it's a skateboarding bulldog.
Yeah. Oh, and the kid cried.
Yeah.
That kid's going to have a tough life. Ooh, I'm sorry. That's like, that's tough. Oh, yeah. He was a photo, or is it like a drawing?
It's a drawing.
Oh, my. Timmy is afraid of stickers. I'm sure there's a name for that.
It's a pretty gnarly drawing of a skateboard bulldog.
Yeah. We brought our own video to Brooklyn Bowl tonight, or this morning, or whenever we played.
Oh, really?
It's been a very confusing day, but it was of skateboarding bulldogs. So,
oh, okay. Because
we're into pulled that. All the YouTube clips.
Yeah.
Oh, it's pretty. There's good. A lot of skateboarding bulldogs.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that is a good one. Sweet. Well, why don't we get one more song? 2013. What, can you adjective this or verb it? Since it's not shredding, it's going to be.
Slicing.
Yeah, fair enough. That's fair.
We're gonna slice it up.
That would stick to the overall theme of the show.
Since we joked over everything, what's the nuts and bolts of how people get your music and come see you? What's the next show?
Next show is January 31st because we're hibernating for a month.
Fair enough.
Just, naturally. You
know, well, Times Square. New Year's
show,
Eve, obviously.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You guys
are
playing in the ball.
Yeah, Ryan. Ryan Seacrest.
Not a Slice guy.
Then they're not going to be
Ryan Seacrest.
Oh.
Did someone say that already?
Oh my god, we got it. Yes, Ryan Seacrest, Slice Guy, Ryan Seacrest.
Not so much.
And where?
RadicalDads.com.
And then where are you playing on the 31st?
Oh, Silent Barn.
Perfect.
You know. The scene of the crime.
That place is great. That place is way less.
I think that's the new signifier.
What?
Have you been to Silent Barn?
Did you get your hair cut at Silent Barn? That's the signifier.
Are they offering haircuts?
Oh, yeah.
There it is, Darren.
Haircuts.
There it is.
Well,
Chris got one.
I got mine there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So that's why he's a slice guy.
I don't know.
She got her
hair cut at Silent Barn. And I saw her eating a slice. Yeah, just lock it. Yeah, lock it up.
Lock it up.
Yeah.
She's going to record her new EP with Julian and Carlos.
Yeah. Oh, she was listening to Dramamine, and I was like, all right. All right.
Forgive that one.
No, that's just the only old song they ever truck out. The only one.
Really?
Yeah, let him play Ohio or something like that. Anyway,
great through.
Oops.
Here we go.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us. All right, I'm going to go die now. All right. So this is it. Hey, to everyone, have a happy and healthy new year.
Be safe.
Eat pizza. Be merry. Take some time off. Drink some whiskey. We'll see you in 2014. Oh, my God. 2014. It's going to be huge. So many slices.
Big slice.
Disappears, follow directions and whisper to my ears. Stay close to the maps. There's no need to unpack, but we're not staying here. In this cold atmosphere.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.